Hello, and welcome to the very first ever ALS Association Greater Philadelphia Chapter podcast. My name is Tony Heil, the Director of Communications and Public Policy here at the ALS Association Greater Philadelphia Chapter based out of Ambler, Pennsylvania. Our chapter represents families with ALS in eastern Pennsylvania, central and southern New Jersey, and all of Delaware, and we're hoping to talk about ALS issues that affect people with Lou Gehrig's disease all over the region, the country, and the world. Today we have some terrific guests, and I'm looking forward to having a good conversation about the most important thing regarding ALS, and that's the individuals who are living with this disease day to day. I'd like to introduce you to two amazing people. First, my friend Matt Bellina, who is a veteran living with ALS from Holland, Pennsylvania, and Larry Kaplan, who is one of our organizers for the Hot Chocolate event coming up on March 12th. And he lives in Westchester, Pennsylvania, in Delaware County, which is very confusing to everybody. Thank you both for being here on our inaugural podcast.
No problem.
Yeah, glad to be here.
So obviously the most important thing when it comes to this disease are the people affected by it. And before we go over a lot of the details about ALS in a future podcast, Matt, tell us a little bit about your background and what your life was like before ALS and when you learned that you were facing this disease.
Sure. So I know every story is unique and different. Mine started right after I finished flight school. I didn't know anything was wrong. I knew my arm was twitching at the time, but I didn't know specifically anything was wrong with that. And I was in a very warm climate, so I wasn't running into any issues. And I moved up to Washington State, where it was a lot colder, and I started to realize that I just couldn't. It's almost like I had forgotten how to write with my left hand. I was flying EA-6B Prowler at the time, which is an electronic attack jet, and I started noticing my hand on the throttle was cramping a lot during small movements like simulated carrier landings and things like that. And then little by little, it just kept getting worse, spread to other limbs in the body, and by 2012, I had gotten an EMG that came back positive for neurodegeneration, and I kind of hung on for a while because I was far away from home and hoping that if I could get closer to home and family before I got diagnosed and out of the Navy would be a good deal. So I did, made it to the greater Philadelphia area. You know, I did a lot of research on chapters and good places to go, and it seemed to be the best, so I got orders there with the work of the Navy detailer and made it back and got diagnosed in April of 2014.
So where were you again before you came out to the Philly area?
I was living in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and I actually was going to the Mayo Clinic down there.
Oh, great.
And kind of fighting off a diagnosis from the Mayo Clinic because, you know, it is a difficult process. Their diagnosis process is difficult, and a lot of it's based on, you know, what the patient tells you. Not that I wasn't hiding anything from them, but, you know, there was kind of an agreement that it would be a certain diagnosis before they did it. And I think that's the way it should be.
So along the way, did you have some kind of hint that this is what's happening? Because, I mean, you had the internet at your disposal. You were probably looking up, you know, what you were feeling. Or did you have a clue?
I knew from November 25th of 2012 that this is what I had. I'm not going to lie, that was a lonely time because, you know, in the absence of a formal diagnosis, you don't really go around telling people. So I, you know, internalized it. My wife and I both knew, and we had made kind of mention to our families that it might be that, but I don't think that they really believed it because we didn't really seem, we were acting unconcerned. So, you know, we didn't have the network that, you know, like what we got when we got here with the chapter and, you know, kind of became a part of the family. It's been a huge turn for us. And, you know, from that regard, you know, nobody wants to get an ALS diagnosis, but from that regard, getting the diagnosis turned out to be a very good thing for us.
Right, because now you're able to get services from us, maybe from the VA, from locally here. And you're around some friends and family now, too.
Right, and then just being able to meet people, meeting other people with ALS. I mean, you really do meet some of the most amazing families. And you know, a lot of days are bad days. You know, sometimes you eat the bear and sometimes the bear eats you. When you meet these other families, you know, and the courage that they give you and the hope that they give you and pick you up on your bad days, you know, you don't have that without you know, the chapter, without the ALS Association, at least in this particular area, you know, pushing it and getting us all involved together.
So, Matt, you're only 31 years old. You are a veteran. And how did you come to find out that you had ALS? Like, what was the symptoms and what was that process like?
So I had fasciculation in my arm, in my left arm, and the cramping and that stiffness for quite some time. I was also living in Minnesota when I, you know, started to realize something was wrong. But the cold weather, I was a big explanation for me. I figured it's just so cold.
That's a normal thing.
Yeah, it would be a normal thing to think. You know, my hands don't work because it's so cold. And then finally went to the doctor. My wife had had enough of, you know, just watching my arm twitch on the bed. And she said, you need to go to a doctor. So I went in. And at first they thought it was a pinched nerve. I did some physical therapy, but that wasn't doing anything. And they were starting to see some weakness in the hand. So they sent me in for an EMG. And I didn't know anything about ALS at the time. I mean, I knew about Lou Gehrig because he was a Yankee, and you know, I knew about Lou Gehrig's disease. I didn't make the association in my head. And so when I was sitting in the lobby waiting for my EMG, I Googled it on my smartphone and saw what the test was used for. I saw what the symptoms for ALS were, and I realized before I went in there that that's what I had. And I still had to go through with the painful EMG after that. And you know, I could hear, you know, you know, smartphones are great, but they're also, you know, they sometimes give you too much information, because I knew what the motor unit potentials were supposed to sound like. And, you know, so I could hear them on the EMG, and I pretty much knew what I had then and there. But it was still only limited to the one arm with some upper neuron signs like Brisk reflexes and Babinski reflex on my left leg.
What kind of reflex?
Babinski reflex.
I don't know.
They rub a it's elicited by the doctor. They rub a the back of their reflex hammer up the back of your foot.
Oh, okay.
Your toes, your healthy toes would point down, but if you have spasticity, brisk hyperreflexia, your toes will point up. So my toes pointed up, and they elicited clonus in my left ankle. So there's, you know, you could, that would be one normal reflex beat when you move, when they lift your foot up. Mine just continued. The ankle just kept beating more reflexes. So they knew I was hyperreflexive. But there was no lower motor neuron degeneration anywhere but in my left arm at the time. So I was still kind of an outlier. And that bought me some time and the ability to move back east closer to home before I was formally diagnosed.
Well, and since then, you're a slower progressor, but you've seen some changes, I'm sure.
Yeah, I feel changes, you know, for the most part. You know, my legs are clumsier. They're not really all that weak, but I have the tendency to stumble. I have the weakness has moved into my right arm, so I'm not as strong. You know, I can still lift my kids up. They're little, but, you know, not for very long. I fatigue very quickly. I take long naps during the day, which, you know, I like taking naps anyway, but that's kind of been added. At least now I have an excuse. And other than that, you know, just the cold really affects me a lot more than I used to. I can't run. I can kind of jog. I can't run anymore. And just that kind of thing.
Well, you might not feel physically strong, but we've got the pictures of you in your bomber jacket, and everyone likes to pass them around because it's a pretty good picture of you with Kurt. And, I mean, you do look like, at least in that picture, that you could at least beat up Larry.
Yeah, I mean, there's always a possibility that I still could beat up Larry.
And he's even clean-shaven.
No, I don't know. I'm definitely not going to try to get any fights from here on out. It's probably not the best idea. And my NCAA eligibility is probably not worth it anymore. But
we do try and recommend people with ALS not get any fights, yeah. But we try and recommend that for everybody.
Yeah. So, no, I just have to take it easy now. You know, I have to rest and save my energy for the things that are important, like playing with my kids and keeping my house from falling into shambles as my kids try to, you know, throw their toys all over the place.
Yeah, well, they'll do that.
Yeah.
Do they keep doing that once the kids get a little bit older, too?
That will continue forever. Yes.
Oh, good.
Well, it's something to look forward to. Now, Larry, I'm sure you've heard a lot of stories like Matt's in terms of people being diagnosed. You've been involved with the chapter for a long time now, right?
Since 1994.
1994.
Yeah.
That was that pre or post OJ?
It was about the same time.
Well, like whatever inspires you to get involved, that's great. I know your story a bit. For the people who don't, tell us how you originally got involved with the ALS Association.
Sure. I used to have a sports card memorabilia store back in the early 90s. And before Kurt Schilling was the Kurt Schilling that everyone knows, I had him come to my store to do a signing. And the following year, as far as I know, he started this Kurt's Pitch for ALS, where you could donate $1 a strikeout. And it sounded like a good cause. He was a nice guy when he was at my store. And that's how I got involved. We went to the first Kurt's Pitch for ALS party. I think it was at the Sheraton Society Hill. And he signed autographs. And one of the patients had spoken. And after meeting the patient and like hearing their family talk and everything, we knew it was a good cause. And just started doing that Kurt's Pitch every year. And after a few years, I was never really... intimidated or excited to see some of the, to be around the players. So we really just asked the ALS Association if there's ever anything that you need at the events like that, my wife and I would be happy to help out.
Yeah, well, you've been helping out a lot. Larry and his wife, Jill, have been involved since 1994 at the festival, at other events. What other events have you been involved in? Oh, right, Hot Chocolate coming up on March 12th. See how good I am at mentioning that.
That's not bad.
And how long have you been doing Hot Chocolate?
I have no idea. It's probably been at least 7 years.
7 years. Because, and you had gone to Hot Chocolate first.
So at one of the Kurt's Pitch events, we actually won 2 tickets to Hot Chocolate. And I think it was your first or second Hot Chocolate event. And that's how we ended up going to that event. And that was great. And after going, the next year they asked us if we would be interested in being on the board and kind of helping out with the event. And I think the following year, they asked us if we would like to co-chair the events.
And so, and that event's grown and grown. I think last year it sold out.
Yep, I think it sold out. We had just about 500 people, and I believe that we raised almost $77,000 in one evening.
And we think we can beat that this year.
It's always been our goal to break $100,000. When we first got involved with the Hot Chocolate event, it was really more to get younger people involved and to get the name, the ALS Association name out there and get people to know about it. And we always thought that, while that's a great idea, this event should also be able to make a lot of money because it's a great event. And it's really grown over the past 5-7 years that has been going on.
Well, one of the reasons we think it'll be successful this year, beyond all of the amazing chocolate, which some of us were eating before this started, is one of the young people who is going to be there, and that's Matt, who is only 31 years old, which is younger than me even, but I won't say how much younger. And so Matt, listening to Larry, he was talking about how Kurt got him involved. You got to meet Kurt at this year's annual luncheon. Correct. I saw a picture in the paper, you meeting Kurt and Shonda. What was it like being around that atmosphere at the Phillies, both at the luncheon and at the Phillies Festival this past June?
That was really cool. Kurt Schilling has, being a Yankees fan, has broken my dreams time after time. He did it in the World Series in 2001 and in the playoffs in 2004. You know, but he's great. You know, I always had a lot of respect for him, as much as he defeated the Yankees twice at critical moments. So to see his dedication and his wife Shonda's dedication to raising awareness and raising funds for this disease, it really impressed me, and it gave me a lot of hope too. It makes you feel like you're not alone. You know, obviously friends and family are always going to help in situations like this and when they can, but to see people like that, to see the Phillies out there, you know, fighting the fight for us, it makes you feel real good inside. And yeah. It gives you a lot of energy.
And through last year, the Phillies have raised over $15.2 million for our chapter to strike out ALS, and that's since 1984. And this year's Phillies Festival is on Monday, June 1st, and we're already very excited about it. I'm sure Larry, Jill, and your kids will be involved in some way.
Yes.
Volunteer there often.
Yes.
And your kids have been involved... Was it since their birth or before then?
A little before their birth. Now, our kids have...
And your kids, their name, like, how old are they now?
Sydney is 11 and Riley is 9. Sydney's a girl, Riley's a boy. And
yes, I got that wrong once by accident. We'll never live it down.
They've been volunteering at the Phillies Festival with us since I believe that they were 7 and 5 years old, selling bracelets for $1, selling t-shirts, all types of stuff for the ALS Association. And last year is the first year where they asked if they could run their own event. And they actually ended up doing a fundraiser at Sky Zone in Glen Mills. And they raised a little over $1,200 in one day from their friends doing this fundraiser. Our kids are very involved.
That's amazing. Adults are trying to figure out how to raise that much money.
Well, that's a big thing. We run into people all the time that always say, oh, I wish I was in your position. I would like to help out. I don't know what position they think that I'm in or that they thought my kids are in. Anyone can help out at any time. So it's nothing to do financially. You can help in many different ways. And as little as $5 here, $10 there really does help out.
Yeah, we had over $1.8 million raised for our walks last year with 15,000 walkers. That doesn't count as many donors. All of those donations, $5, $10, they add up quickly over time. Of course, for hot chocolate, they will be paying a little bit more than $5. The early bird pricing for hot chocolate lasts until February 12th, with general admission at $75. And after February 12th, it goes to $85, which is not much of a jump. So hopefully, either way, you'll be getting those tickets. But the VIP tickets are where it's at. You'll get to have other food beyond chocolate. Lots of snacks, extra time, mingling, and that...
You might even get to meet a penguin.
Oh, right, and get to meet a penguin. Are we sure it's a penguin this year?
Better be. Everyone wants to meet the penguin again. Last year, that was the hit.
We have...
I mean, other than meeting Matt, you can meet a penguin.
I remember meeting...
I think I'd rather meet the penguin.
I remember meeting Bunny a few years ago. So I don't know why there was a bunny at the aquarium, but there was a bunny there.
That was probably just for your area.
Oh, well, the VIP tickets with extra access and even more food is $175 for early bird pricing until February 12th, and it's $185 after that. But the reason to get your early bird tickets now at www.alshotchocolate.org is because there's a good chance this event will sell out again this year, and you want to get your tickets early and often because you can buy tickets for a lot of your friends. I know I've seen over 100 people already who are planning to come, and they're still over a month away until the event, so get your tickets soon.
And with the VIP area, we do have to cut off attendance at 150, so there will not be more than 150 people able to purchase VIP tickets.
Well, all the more reason people should get their tickets now. You guys will be there, and that's a draw in itself. Maybe we could up the prices after listening to this. But I want to go back to, you were talking about your kids being involved. One of the things that at the annual luncheon that was neat to me was Kurt talking about how his kids have grown up in this and been involved, and that I remember him saying that his kids are not awkward around people who are in wheelchairs or have disabilities.
Right.
And that he was very appreciative of the impact that it's had on them in terms of building their character. How have you seen that? And then Matt, you can touch on that because you have kids your own.
I mean, I think it's great. My daughter and my son, anytime they've ever seen anyone that had any type of issues, if you're a good person, you're a good person. So they're not scared of wheelchairs. They're not scared of tubes. They're not scared of computer speaking for people, and they've just kind of, I guess, it's not that they've grown up around that, it's just that it doesn't affect them. They don't think that it makes the person bad or scary or anything like that. They know that people have feelings, and if they're a good person, they're a good person.
And Matt, your kids are a lot younger, and not that you want them to see those things, but they got to come to the festival. You know, what's it like to see them appreciate some of these things, I guess?
You know, I was nervous about that, actually, to see, you know, how they would, you know, react to seeing people in various states of disability. And I think that's one of the impressive things that we don't give kids enough credit for, is how non-judgmental and how adaptive they are. And I was really proud of them. It was, they weren't fazed. I was a little concerned they were going to run into people that probably didn't need to be run into because they're excited. But
and how old are they again?
They're three and one. So they're a ball full of energy, and they listen just great, as I'm sure you can imagine.
I have a 1-year-old myself.
Yeah, but they it was cool. It was really cool because I saw them. It just, everything that they see is the new normal to them. You know, everything they see is a wonder anyway. So to see somebody that looks different is just another part of life that they're learning about. And I think a lot about how I'm going to raise them. And, the difficulties and with the disease and what that's going to lead to. And sometimes, that can be a negative feeling. But in the end, I always remind myself that, this is an opportunity to teach them something that most kids will never learn. And for that reason, I'm grateful.
Oh, that's something I think we all hope that our kids will be able to grow up with. Obviously not an easy thing to grow up with, too. On that note, when we were talking about kids being involved in growing up and all this and really seeing all of the things that the chapter does, so you're immersed in it as a kid, and then now you as a person with ALS, you as a volunteer who's been involved since the Clinton administration, how have you seen the benefits of the chapter, whether for you or because you've gone to clinics, seeing other people and so you've become immersed in a different way.
Yeah, this is, I kind of touched on it a little bit earlier on, but the biggest thing, the biggest benefit to me, and I know every patient's different and everybody gets something different out of it, but it's just to be able to sit and talk with other patients, to be able to meet other patients. And that chapter does an amazing job of getting people together and assessing what people need. I know, because of the chapter that I'm in, because I'm fortunate enough to be where I am, that I'm gonna get what I need when I need it, and my family's gonna get what they need when they need it, and that kind of peace of mind is something that you can't put a price tag on. That's something that without that, this disease would be a lot more challenging.
And Larry, you've seen a lot of patients that have, well, people with ALS who have interacted with each other, interacted at these events, and the events become more than just the fundraising tool. It's about building that community.
Absolutely. See, I mean, most people you see at one event and then they start bringing their friends to other events and then they start bringing their friends to other events. When I think one of the first Kurtz pitches that we attended, there might have been 30 people in the room. And the same with the various, the Hot Chocolate or the Phillies Festival or whatever it is. The number of people, it's just grown dramatically. And we know a bunch of patients. We know a bunch of patients' families, and without the chapter, they wouldn't have the access to different technologies and different things to help everyday life. And I know for certain, we have a lot of people who, from let's say the Ice Bucket Challenge, they heard the ALS Association made $100 million, and they're blowing the money on all types of stuff. And I can assure you that that money is not being blown on office space or nice chairs. Money that goes to the Greater Philadelphia chapter that we've seen really does help the patients for their everyday life and for their families.
Well, as someone who's sitting in this room with you, I can tell you these chairs have been donated, and they're nice, but they're not that nice. And
I didn't see any Ferraris parked outside either.
Well, that's because no one in this whole office complex has a Ferrari, and I don't think it would be safe for me to drive anyway. But you've seen the chapter grow a lot. When you started, we didn't offer all of these programs. There wasn't an assistive technology program when you first got involved. The Phillies had raised a lot of money, but not nearly.
I don't think there was a website when I got involved.
Was there an internet when you got involved?
Probably not.
So what's it like seeing how the chapter has grown? Because you have been you're not the reason that's the Phillies. It's Ellen. That's everybody. But
sure,
what's it like being part of the reason that it's grown?
No, it's great. Just the vast number of technology changes over the past years that just allow patients to live, if you want to say, a more normal life than what they used to have. just from the funds and everything that's from the knowledge.
If I may interject, the technology portion of what is done here had a pretty big impact on me personally and how I faced this disease and how I felt about, you know, what was the progression, what was going to happen. You know, all the information I had initially was off of Wikipedia, and that's not the most promising picture. And you don't see, you know, you don't see that there are opportunities now, you know, using the ocular muscles and the, you know, retinal scanners and cough assist and breathing assist and these integrative wheelchairs that can help make life a little more normal. It really kind of lifted me out of the despair that came with the initial diagnosis, and I'll be forever grateful for that.
What have you looked into some of these technologies?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, I spend probably an unhealthy amount of time reading about this kind of stuff, but
well,
it is what it is. You know, I also retired from the Navy 4 weeks ago, so I'm going crazy just trying to find something to do. So it does give me a lot of time to read about, you know, A, medical research and where we're going with that, which is a whole other great subject, and B, you know, the assistive technology and how that can kind of help counteract some of the difficulties that come along with the disease. And I know that, you know, until I have to use them, I can't really pass judgment on them, but it certainly gives me a lot of hope to know that it's there and that it's available.
Yeah, you were saying before we sat down that the news you've been reading makes you feel like you never want to have ALS, but now is a better time to have it, I guess, as you said, than ever before because of the new research and technologies coming out.
Right. If you're going to get diagnosed with ALS, you know, better today than 5 years ago for sure. And, you know, I guess in that category, we're the lucky ones.
Right. And so you said you've already been spending time trying to find out what to do next. And there's a lot of things coming up throughout the year. I mean, we're not just busy with one event. If we were and we raised $100,000 and that was it, we wouldn't be able to do a lot of things throughout the year. What things are you guys looking forward to the rest of the year?
Well, I'm personally looking forward to the Phillies Festival again. I went last year and it was awesome. I marked it on my calendar already to go again next year. And to bring my kids and family and actually hopefully more friends to come along too. That was an awesome event. And that's probably number one on my list.
Yeah, the Phillies Festival has always been a great event. You get to meet the players. Everyone's so nice. A lot of stuff to do. And obviously that probably raises the most funds each year.
Yeah.
Also, we've gone to, they do a bike ride down in Wildwood. And again, our whole family, kids, everything. Our kids finally learned how to ride bikes because they want to ride this year.
So, oh, great.
And it ends at the Piers in Wildwood, and then you can just hang out on the rides, and it's a great day. And again, that event raises a lot of money.
And it's fun having a lot of different unique events, from the festival, the hot chocolate, to the bike ride, and of course the Walk to Defeat ALS, which raised $1.8 million throughout the 7 walks that we have in Greater Philadelphia, Ocean City, Lehigh Valley, Lakewood, Rehoboth, and in Bloomsburg, and in Hershey, which is coming up right around the same time as the Phillies Festival, just a couple days after that. So it's going to be a busy week, festival, and then a walk right after that. But we're excited. And then I think, Matt, you were talking about being interested in advocacy this year, right, too, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
I get involved with advocacy here as a public policy director. We go to Harrisburg, we go to Trenton, we go to Dover, and then we go to Washington, D.C., which is in May. And we're going to be in Harrisburg in April, advocating things for things like the ALS Registry in Washington, which you may have read about a bit, and then the research project at the Department of Defense, which obviously because of the veterans connection, Matt is a veteran, and military veterans are twice as likely to be diagnosed with ALS as the general population, and also advocating for patient care funding when we're here in the States. It reminds me with the DOD funding. Were you aware of that Veterans Connection early on?
I was, yeah. And actually, interestingly enough, I was lucky enough to go down and do the as a consumer reviewer this year in October and review all the research proposals.
Wow, that's great.
And, it was incredible. And the stuff that's on the horizon is mind blowing. I mean, it really is exciting.
That's terrific that you're able to see that there's some exciting stuff because I've gone and not to that, but listened to some researchers, and sometimes it can be very confusing. You've probably listened to a lot of things over the years, Larry, and
I hear lots of words that I don't understand.
And I think that's most people. In future podcasts, we're going to be talking to some people who can break it down to regular person language, like me, and explain it a bit more and put it into phrases that we can understand. But going back, one thing we can understand is that we're looking forward to in a few weeks going to Hot Chocolate, and you're both excited about it. Is there anything in particular you're looking forward to this year? The Penguin is going to be fun. You're looking forward to the Shark Tank.
The Shark Tank is always great at night, so you're surrounded on every side by sharks. You're surrounded by millions of calories of every snack you can imagine, from Tasty Cakes and Peanut Chews to Mark Avenue chocolates, Giambri's chocolate pretzels, Cakes and Candies by Mary Ellen, Pravda Vodka. You name it. If it's sweet and bad for you, it's there.
Well, speaking of some of those names, let's run down some of the great sponsors we have for Hot Chocolate. Biota Home Healthcare, KeepSneaks.com, AT&T IT Solutions Consulting, Inc., Rare Solutions, LLC, and 95.7 WBEN FM will all be helping out, and with more supporters coming along the way as people get more and more excited for Hot Chocolate. So we know that's going to raise a lot of money. We know we're going to be doing all this stuff for the chapter, and you're all looking forward to making some new friends as well.
Right, yeah.
Do you need any more friends, Larry?
I don't know if I can make any more friends.
Okay. But you're looking forward to meeting some more people.
I am. You know, after the holiday party, we ended up staying about 2 hours after they closed, just talking to other families, ALS patients, and it was a really worthwhile experience. I look forward to stuff like that.
Yeah, that's a fun. We can raise money online, which we have done, obviously, but it's building that community that makes a big difference. And online is where you can find the ALS Association. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and a number of other sites at ALS Philadelphia, and you can get your tickets to Hot Chocolate or learn more about our chapter at ALSPhiladelphia.org. Larry, you said that people now find you. They know you're involved online, and
yes,
people have, as a result of that community, you've become a conduit in a way, so people can learn about the chapter, and you've been able to get people connected beyond your fundraising efforts as a result.
Absolutely, yeah. We've gotten people involved with your chapter just from them seeing on Facebook, you know, asking why, what do you have to do with the ALS Association? And we say, you know, we just volunteer, and they may have a story of someone that they know that has it, and we'll connect them with the chapter and let them know, you know, that there is help out there for them and their family.
And all the more reason why, if you're on Facebook, if you're on Twitter, which you should be. Share your information if you're going to be on coming to these events. Let people know, because even if you can't spend a lot of money, spending your time raising awareness makes a big difference. So with a little bit left, are there any other things that you're looking forward to doing with the chapter? Any other events coming up or people you're looking forward to seeing?
No,
you've seen enough people.
Well, I meet somebody new every time I show up, so you know it's like that's always the exciting thing for us is, you know, another person that we haven't met, and another person from the chapter, and what, you know, what they are willing to offer and do for you. So.
No, it is. It's great. The reason that, you know, we've been involved for as long as we have, you meet some of the patients, you meet some of the families, and I mean, they're great people, and you know. Most people, every day of their life, they have something that bothers them. You know, they think that their life is so tough and so difficult. And most people, you don't know what tough or difficult is. Most of the patients don't complain. Most of the families don't complain. And you just see, like, how amazing the chapter is. And that's why we're involved.
Well, that's terrific. And, you know, we look forward to having you guys involved with this event, with every other event this year. You don't have to be at every single event, but... we look forward to having everybody come out on March 12th to Hot Chocolate, coming out to the Phillies Festival on June 1st. You can learn more at www.alsphiladelphia.org and follow us on Facebook and Twitter at ALS Philadelphia. Thanks to Larry. Thanks to Matt. I hope you guys had a good time on the on the first podcast for the ALS Association.
Oh, one of the greatest days of my life.
It was absolutely, I'll be talking about it for years.
And you'll be encouraging everyone else to listen and be part of it too, right?
Of course.
Yep.
All right, great. Thanks so much.